Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, everyone. That welcome and disclaimer was from our founder, Brian Brown. And you're listening to the Brown Briefly, Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. This morning, we have five brieflies gathered via the magic of Zoom and in our Voice of Vachon studio to discuss local, state, national, and international news and nonsense. We aim for honest, civil discussions based in truth and integrity. First, let me welcome activist Kevin Jones, and I like to call him the Clark Kent impersonator. Welcome, Kevin, and happy birthday to you.
Ooh, hey, you guys are dialed into my my personal birthday schedule. That's awesome. Thank you so much. I've been away for a couple of weeks, so thank goodness for the disclaimer. I'm ready to jump right in and be outlandish.
Should we sing to you?
And also,
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Kevin. Happy birthday to you. There you go.
You did it. Good job.
Awesome. Thank you, Lynn.
That was our Georgia peach, Lynn Kerrigan. Good morning, Lynn. Welcome to you.
Good morning. And you've now heard my motto, which is not happy birthday, but nothing left to lose.
And we have Captain of the Airways, Truman O'Brien, this morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And we also have with us via Zoom, Bruce Hallman, known fondly by the Brieflies as the Guardian of the Galaxy. Good morning, Bruce, and welcome.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And I'm Gail Kelmer, your host for this week's program. Well, I thought we'd start off with a little check-in. How did each of you mark this Labor Day weekend?
I can start. I started by, I celebrated by laboring.
That's no fun.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm very, very happy to have been laboring, because what I did was I had the exhaust manifolds of my port engine on my boat had to be replaced. And so a young man and I changed both manifolds and headers, took all day, was totally covered in grease, got the boat covered in grease as well. But man, that thing runs beautifully. I'm so excited.
Finally. You lost me at exhausted.
Yeah. You have, but we were exhausted. Oh, man, those things are heavy. I'm telling you. Those exhaust manifolds. Yeah. Woo. But anyway, I've not been able to use my boat all summer long.
Oh, big job.
And we finally got it done. And yesterday and the day before, we were out running around in the boat. Yeah. That's great. Kevin, were you out in your boat this week?
That's awesome, Truman. No, I didn't do any boating, but you know, those boats usually allocate so much room for those really difficult jobs. So you didn't say how long you've spent standing on your head. And if you didn't get caulking compound everywhere, then you've only done, you know, a little bit of boat
work. That's true.
Well, forgive you for having grease.
I have to tell you that the young man I hired was fairly slight by comparison to me anyway. And at one point when he was putting bolts in, there was a bracket that he couldn't get around. And I had to close the lid on the engine compartment. So he is completely buried in this underneath this thing with his flashlight of his phone trying to get this bolt in. But anyway, he got it. So it was exciting.
Wow.
I think there's labor laws against that, Truman.
Yeah, that probably. Well, he was over 12. Come on.
You know. You know, I have to say, I spent a few summers building sailboats with Clark Boats, San Juan series. And there was one day when we, at the close of the shift, we heard this thumping, thump, 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 thump. And we're wondering, what in the heck is going on? We're walking around listening for this thumping, and it's coming out of a San Juan 24, which is up high up because they were putting the keel on it. So the thing is like, you know, you got to climb a 12-foot ladder to get up into the boat. We go up there, and there's a guy in the very back of the boat who was putting in the, when you sit in the cockpit of the San Juan 24 and you open up a hatch, right? Yeah. There's bulkheads that go in between the deck and the hull. So you actually have a hatch that forms, and you have to climb in and glass in those wooden bulkheads. This guy had gotten stuck and he, I don't know if he glassed himself in or exactly what, but he said during the time he was stuck, it's so noisy in the shop, all the tools are running, nobody could hear him.
Oh,
and so
no.
He just went to sleep. And then at the end of the shift, things quieted down and we could hear him thumping on the boat. So,
oh
yeah.
My God. Luckily that you heard him before everyone left, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who knows what would have happened in the morning?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's like the example. This was from the early 19th century in Scotland in the shipyard building. I think it was called the Great Northern. I can't remember the name of the ship right now, but it was a huge vessel that they were building to lay the first transatlantic cable.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in a Scottish shipyard. And at the what happened was a riveter and two of his assistants disappeared. And the owner of the shipyard refused to shut down the operation to see if they could hear them tapping. And so the ship was sort of it was a cursed ship. Nothing ever went right with it. And when they dismantled it, when they broke it up, they found the three bodies in a compartment. They had been sort of riveted into a compartment, but nobody could hear them.
Oh my gosh.
So interesting. So leading into Labor Day,
there you go.
Has changed, thank God.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, before we launch into, which we will be talking, letting our listeners know what's up and coming, we're going to talk a little bit. Bruce is going to share a bit of the history of Labor Day, and we're going to talk about the state of labor in the country. But let's check in with the weekend of Lynn Kerrigan.
She
marked the Labor Day.
I had a big weekend, but I got to rest on Labor Day, which is my favorite thing to do. I had a lovely event on Saturday where my nephew's wife, who's about to bust with her pregnancy, had a lovely baby shower. And actually, I was very pleased at actually how many people remained masked and kept careful distance, and I didn't have to cuss out any of them. It was a lovely, lovely day. And then Sunday afternoon, I got to play a little more music with my friends Mary Shackelford and Jim Burke and Julie Warble and Carmen Chacon, and then went to hear the reading for the memoir group, which has just had their book published, that Jeannie Hashimoto has been shepherding women for like 7 years. This book group had been going, and they finally got a publication out that is now for sale in the bookstore. So I got to kind of catch up on housework and just resting and reading the papers on Labor Day, which is my favorite way to spend it.
Perfect.
And Bruce, it was the final weekend of a major show at the museum.
It was in and out, being LGBTQ on Vashon, which was supposed to close a year plus ago. But because of COVID was extended and extended and extended, finally closed this past weekend. An incredibly successful exhibit. We've won awards from King County, from the state of Washington, and from the American Association of State and Local Histories for that exhibit. It's been a highly successful and important exhibit, I think, for Vashon. But sad to see it close. And if you didn't get to see it, it was just a gorgeous exhibit, designed by Jessica Dwyer, and just one of the most colorful, sort of vibrant sort of exhibits the museum has had. And when an exhibit comes down, it's kind of sad, because when you walked into the museum, the first thing you saw was the window screens done by Brian Fisher called Let's Dance.
Yeah.
Which were five window screens all about the anthem, the gay anthems, gay LGBTQ anthems. At the time, various people came out on Vashon. And then in the rafters of the museum, at the top of the museum, was this incredible rainbow crane screen done by Tom Pruksma. And those both came down yesterday and this morning, and it's just sort of like, it feels a bit empty in there.
what will you and the museum supporters be filling it up with next?
We have an exhibit that's opening in November. In fact, we just had a meeting about whether we're going to be able to open in November and whether it's going to be live or virtual, all those things. Sort of depends on what happens with Delta and Mu and whatever comes after that. But it's an exhibit done in conjunction with the Vashon Nature Center called Natural Wonder, an island shaped by water. And it's an exhibit about the natural history of Vashon. So it'll look at all the various ecosystems on Vashon, the history of them, as well as the current state of those ecosystems. So wetlands, shoreline, the geology, you know, the forest areas, the meadow areas, you know, the bogs, each area will have sort of a bit. And then, of course, the human impact on the island. So it's going to be a very, very impressive exhibit.
Nice. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Well, Labor Day as a teacher, once former teacher now, was always like the transition time, the transition weekend from summer into the school year, and that was a big event for many, many people, and anyone who has children certainly knows about that. And so I intended to be prepping for the show this morning, but instead I wrote a poem. I'm going to read you the first stanza of it and save the rest of it for the end of the program. But it kind of sums up my impressions of today, right after Labor Day weekend. It starts out, it's called Slower Everything. Slower everything, suddenly slower. A sigh of relief, no more rushing to have so much fun. That's the first stanza.
All right.
About the length of a haiku, Truman.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Excellent.
So, Bruce, can you give us a little history of Labor Day? I like having a little history moment on each of our shows and mm-hmm. tap into your vast wealth of information and
hear. Sure. Yeah, Labor Day, it's an interesting holiday. I mean, the United States and Canada are the only countries in the world that celebrate it on the first Monday in September. Everybody else celebrates Labor Day on May 1st, May Day. And it's interesting how that sort of emerged. There's conflicting sort of stories about how Labor Day in the United States got started, but certainly late 19th century, the labor movement, Knights of Labor, you know, types organizations held parades and held celebrations, and the idea was to do it at the end of the summer rather than in May when the weather was much less predictable. And when it became established, and it became established relatively early on in the 1870s, early 1880s in states, at the state level. I think Oregon was the first, if I remember, Oregon was the first state to set up a Labor Day, and then it became a federal holiday in 1894. At that time, only 30 states celebrated it, and it was only a holiday for federal employees in 1894, but eventually all the states made it state holidays as well as a federal holiday. But it's interesting, too, that Labor Day and the recognition of Labor Day goes back to the several pandemics ago, back to the Black Death.
Oh.
What the plague did in Europe is it rebalanced the power relationship between property owners and labor. You know, and at that time it was largely a feudal system, just emerging from a feudal system. So, you know, traditionally, you know, the people that worked the land were totally, you know, at the mercy of the landowners. And of course, with the Black Death, you know, there were no people left to work the land, no people left to work in industries. And so all of a sudden, labor had incredible amounts of power in relationship to what they'd ever had before. And so in 1593, the first 8-hour workday comes about in Spain. And as a result of the lack of labor, and that then builds into what in the late 19th century becomes the labor movement and becomes, in particularly in Western societies, becomes the 888 movement, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of recreation. And so it's an interesting kind of emergence of a movement that by the Great Depression, it was pretty well recognized as Labor Day as the 1st of September. And as you pointed out, Gail, it also becomes this sort of unofficial end of summer. You get sort of Labor Day sales, you get school starting, you get all these things that sort of mark the end of summer and become associated with Labor Day. So it becomes much broader than just celebrating labor.
I'd be interested to hear from any of you on this topic, and just a thought that perhaps, our current pandemic in a certain way has rebalanced the relationship between labor and business owners in an interesting fashion too. Does anybody want to talk about that a little bit?
I had a question, Bruce, that I find, I think it's interesting that you were saying there was such a labor shortage at the end of the bubonic plague, the Black Plague. And we're having a labor shortage now, as you intimated, Gail. And it's primarily because people are just not showing up to apply for work. I'm wondering if we had the same situation in 1918. With the flu there. Do you know if that was also evident?
Yeah, yes, it wasn't as severe as it is right now. And the whole, we can come back and talk about why people aren't showing up for work right now, right. But that's another discussion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the great flu epidemic of 1918 had an impact. The issue there was it was over relatively quickly. Hmm. And there was really a major societal attempt to forget about it. Uh-huh. It's really interesting that, it occurred during the end of World War II. So it really started in the trenches of World War II.
World War One.
So as World War One ended, there were other economic dislocations that were sort of overshadowed the pandemic economic dislocations. And then as you moved into the 1920s, it was really a boom time, except in the agricultural sector. And so, the nation, the world moved very quickly away from the economic impacts of that pandemic. And so it's not really as comparable. Whereas this pandemic, because of its extended nature and the fact that it may well be with us for another year plus, it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of plays out in terms of the relationship between labor and employers.
Lynn, yeah. I see you're kind of spot there too.
Yeah, I do think there's some correlation, though, Bruce, that you may remember more of the details about this than I do, but it seems I remember as a social worker in my training that, the Gilded Age in the 1890s was a period of great inequality, and there were some major strikes right around 1893, and then I'm hearing you're saying that, it was 1894 when there was that federal holiday that was established, and it makes me think that might have been part of the response, the reactions to the major strikes that were happening during that period when, people want safe work. And I think that some of the early union action had to do with really unsafe conditions.
When was the Triangle Fire? Do you remember? Because I know that was the beginning of
it. I'll have to look it up as we go.
1914, 1915.
Yeah, I think it was a bit later, but it was okay. Another, big question
moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll look it up and see if I can get to it.
if you step back a little bit and look at it in a broader sense, that labor movement of the late 1870s, 1880s into the early 1890s really saw its fruition in the period of the Progressive Era, and sort of from 1900 into 1920. That's when all the major legislation, the Food and Drug Administration is formed. I mean, all those kind of things, regulation of businesses, Sherman Antitrust Act. It's a whole set of things put into place in a almost 15-year period because the war sort of shuts it down. But World War I sort of shuts it down. But, it was a major sort of social period of social change, very comparable to what happens, 20 years later with the Great Depression.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. I think I was just to kind of finish my thought. I was going to say, too, that the question of, returning to work right now, I think is a bundle of things, how much we're able to pay people to keep from, having the economy completely crashed. And some of those benefits are going to be disappearing. In the next week or so, we're going to see, how that affects return to work. And also, I think the teachers are concerned about what's going to happen with school reopening. I think there's a lot of questions right now that, a lot of hesitancy, not just about vaccines, but about how are we all going to work together, in a time when the variants are still changing. I guess the last thing I just want to say real quickly is I smiled when I heard that they named this new variant Mu, M-U, I think is how they pronounce it. I don't know. What I think of that word as is kind of a Buddhist term for, rather than answer a yes-no question, yes-no, there's an alternative, which is Mu, which means you're not asking the right question. And I think it's very interesting to even speculate what that might allude to. If we think about what are we not asking right now that might be useful with this pandemic and the variants and trying to get back to, if not normal, something productive for the country. So that's kind of what I think of, Gail, when you talk about it.
Well, and Kevin, you might want to comment on this. I mean, there's 16 million or so unemployed right now. 16, something like that. There's 10 million jobs, unfulfilled right now in the American economy. And the right wing conservatives would have you believe that all the COVID benefits have kept people from going back to work. An alternative explanation is that people finally realize they need to be paid what they're worth and they need to have benefits and childcare and that kind of stuff. So it's a very interesting social moment, I think.
Right. Yeah.
I really find that it's dispiriting, I guess is the right word, to see state governments deciding that they're going to now throw people back into some turmoil relative to this, life-threatening disease by removing benefits so that they'll go back to work and risk their lives again. So oftentimes there is some correlation here, right? Those same governments have chosen to not promote the use of the vaccine. They've chosen to not promote mask wearing. And so it's a real dichotomy. And, time will tell about how those governments are viewed favorably or unfavorably by the people that they purport to represent.
Yeah, I might venture to say that as much as I understand that there are benefits for children as well as parents for in-school attendance, I do think that there's part of that push is economic to get those schools reopened so parents can go back. And I wonder if that's wise, just from the long-term effects of exposing that many kids who then bring those things home to families. I can't imagine, but that we're going to see a massive spike long about October, if it's even that far out.
We talk about this may be a circuitous way to get to the point that I want to make. when we talk about climate change, we talk about the species who are not able to adapt to climate changing rapidly, but humans are not amongst them, right? We're pretty adaptable. So now we have a situation where we know that the American lifestyle is amongst the most expensive in the world. And it's sort of like, is it sustainable? So now people have an opportunity to discover that, you know, maybe it isn't sustainable for them, right? And that we can simplify, we can reduce, we can cut back. Not everybody can, you know, some people have, you know, mortgages and payments, and it's just hard to be agile. But humans are known for adaptability and agility. So maybe that's another big trend that we're going to see. And the happiness that comes along with having some free time and ability to do what I did on Labor Day was, you know, working to replace the deck that I have is very rewarding, as Truman mentioned about working on his boat. And, you know, maybe we'll be seeking solace and gratitude in those areas as opposed to income and acquisition of things.
Thank you for that, Kevin. I just want to say it. That is my grand hope, that is one of the silver linings that come out of this, is that a recognition that perhaps time is more precious than things. And when people actually get it and have an opportunity to live that life, because the pandemic offered that space, maybe we'll extend that. And that has some great benefits for the environment, to not do so much, to not produce so much. There is really, capitalism is built on, American capitalism is built on this idea of endless expansion, and the earth cannot support that. We have to find a balance between what we actually need, and we need, in my opinion, need to understand the difference between a want and a need, and get it a little closer to something that's both environmentally as well as socially sustainable.
You know, Gail, I always think that, you know, capitalism will go down kicking and screaming before that will happen. But the hope that I have in that little arena is that I think that, you know, it was only in the, 80s with Reagan that they passed that policy that said the only people that you have to satisfy, Mr. Corporation, is your shareholders, you know, your stockholders, I'm sorry. And, you know, there are other stakeholders in companies, the customer and the community and, you know, the earth. And I am personally all for that triple bottom line of the profit. You know, I get people have to make money, but I want it balanced with the care of the earth, and I want it balanced with the care and the capability of balancing all of our community and our stockholders and shareholders in a venture together. I think we just have to do a little better job that benefits more people than just a stockholder.
Well, and there are some major cases working that way through the court system. COVID has sort of slowed that down a bit. And, you know, which are really arguing that, Lynn, you know, that the bottom line is not the only measure of success of a corporation in terms of national and public good. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that works its way through the courts, and then how the Supreme Court, you know, now is, you know, has a conservative bias to it, but still is. You know, largely a centrist court, you know, except for a few extremes on the right. You know, so it'll be interesting. But
yeah, and I know some corporations signed on to that idea as well. So it's not just coming from even nonprofits, it's coming from big businesses who are understanding that. And I was thrilled to see that progress being made.
Go ahead.
I was just going to move us forward a little bit. And I always like to hear about our wildlife sightings and observations on the island. So bringing it back a little more local for a moment. And then I'm going to branch out and talk for a moment about the spill in the Gulf of Mexico. And in thinking and sharing what we see in our beautiful Salish Sea that surrounds our island, you know, what would we be looking at if there was a major spill there? So, Kevin,
Well, in addition to my annual fall socializing our local deer to the humans by feeding them apples, I was out working on the deck 2 days ago, and all of a sudden, plop, right, almost within reaching distance, falls out of the sky almost, a vireo. And I didn't quite know if it had like tried to fly through the window or if it was on a feeder and got attacked by another bird. It was on the ground. It was having trouble moving around. It seemed like only had one functioning wing. And it's like, oh my goodness, what do we do? So the first thing I do is I call Susie. And anyway, the bird was, it was breathing. Its eye was open. It was clearly not dead. It was still moving around a little bit. So we covered it up. Called the bird lady of Vashon, and I found out there's more than one, by the way. But I talked to the bird lady, who kind of said, you know, hope it's better in the morning. So we put in a box, we put the box up in an area where predators, you know, bird eating overnight predators couldn't get to it. And the next morning, hopeful, we looked in the box and it's still there. And it hadn't eaten any of the blueberries that we put out because they're fruit eaters and insect eaters. It didn't look like it had drunk any of the water. So I threw a few more apples in and threw a few little choke cherry blossoms in, and I'll come back in another, you know, in the afternoon. In the afternoon, it was still there. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness sakes. So what's going to happen to this little bird? But I noticed that the water dish was empty, probably evaporated in the sun. So I went to get a little bit of water to put back in the dish. And as I'm coming out of the house again, over to where the box is, I notice this like faintly out of this corner of my eye, this little green flash. Didn't really pay too much attention, but as I walk up carefully to the box so as not to disturb the bird and peer in, it's gone. Must have been the little green flash that disappeared. So, you know, those stories don't always end well, but it looks like this one did. And it was a pleasure to be in company of a vireo, which is a delightful little bird if you've never seen one.
Well, my story is a little bit more gruesome, I'm afraid. But this has happened about, oh, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. But my wife said, oh, you have to come out. You have to come out and see what's here. And out in our driveway was the hindquarters of a very small fawn, just the hindquarters. And I thought, how in the world did those things get here? You know, did a coyote bring it up or a dog or what? And I had no idea. So I just happened to have a driveway camera that I had mounted on our light post there. So I pulled the card to go see what possibly it was. But I put the card in, I see nothing. You know, the camera came on and I don't see anything. And all of a sudden, up from the bottom of the camera rises this round head and this eye looking into the camera. And I thought, what in the world? And I kept watching. Well, it turned out it was a young eagle. And the eagle had actually dropped that thing. And when he looked up, he could obviously see the light from the camera or something. Because he was looking in there like, what the heck is this? And all of a sudden he took off. But anyway, kind of made my day.
An eagle drug an entire hindquarters. Yeah, well, it was a
tiny fawn. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not tiny.
Both hind legs and the hindquarters, yep.
That's disgusting.
Well, I know. It was pretty amazing, though, that this eagle dropped it in my yard. Isn't that wild?
On a happier note.
Yes, yes.
I have noted the return, the annual return of the cormorants. Has anyone else who's got a view of the water seen that? I believe they go north in the summers to spawn and, or I don't know if you say spawn with a bird, to mate and to raise their young, and then they return to Vashon Island around this time of year. So it was wonderful to see a few of them out on the pilings again. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the cormorants, they're the large black diving birds that we have here, and you often see them with their wings held aloft, drying in the sun. So that's one way you can know what you're looking at. Good.
All right, I just have one real quick bird story. When I was in Alaska, when I was based in Alaska, in this time of year, you would see the flocks of Canadian geese starting to form their V's, and they would have all of the youngsters up, and the youngsters were all over the place. And you would see these ragged V's, and you could hear the parents going, get over here, come on, light up, get over here. And you'd hear this squawk, squawk of all the youngsters. And it was just a mob scene for about 2 weeks. And finally, slowly, 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 they would start to get organized, and you'd hear them getting into pace. And then pretty soon they would all head south. But anyway, for about 3 weeks there, it was really entertaining to watch the adults trying to train the kids. So.
Well, as a result of Hurricane Ida that was in the Gulf of Mexico there is a spill that's currently maybe more than one that is going on, an oil spill, and at least 10 miles long, last I read, and they've managed to pick up 42 gallons is all of that. So the wildlife that's, you know, survive the other catastrophes in that area are faced yet again with a challenge. And I also was reading that the U.S. government's accountability office found that since 1960s, the federal regulators have allowed, and oil companies have continued to leave some 18,000 miles of pipeline on the seafloor. And those pipes are about 97% of them are decommissioned, but they're abandoned without being cleaned, emptied, or buried. And so they sit there waiting, unfortunately for this kind of event to happen. And then we get another spill like this. Anybody have a thought about that or what that, I mean, if you can think about it from what if that was here? What if that was Vashon? I mean, how it's upsetting to me from afar, but even more so when I think that not that we have oil pipelines so much under us, but we have oil being transported through the San Juans, through the Straits of Juan de Fuca. And hence we do have these risks here as well.
Well, you just have to go back to the two oil spills that occurred around Vashon, you know, going on close to 20 years ago, and the impact of those. And those were relatively small spills. But, you know, at Ellisport KVI Beach, I'd look out on the East Passage, and every day you see the fuel barge coming down from Bellingham, from Cherry Point, to refuel the big ships in Tacoma. And so it's not only the oil tankers, but it's all the movement of oil on barges and other things all through the Salish Sea that really sets us up for a potential disaster. And the fact that it's they're relatively difficult to clean up once they occur. So it's we do have a fragile ecosystem here. But also sitting at KVI Beach and watching at this time of year, it's magnificent. The ospreys are training their young how to hunt, and they'll be taking off pretty soon. The Canada geese are coming in and starting to cluster. You're starting to see the various waterfowl coming through, both down at the west end of Ellisport and in the lagoon at Ellisport at KVI Beach. And so it's just a magnificent time of the year. And then out hiking in Island Center Forest and down on Maury, I've actually found examples of beavers on Vashon.
Really?
Which is a relatively new occurrence on Vashon.
Same in Scotland. Did you read that? An article about they're not very happy about the beavers coming back to Scotland there.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our show, and I guess if anyone else has a final thought on the importance for me anyway, I'm going to say my piece is that, you know, doing what we can before these things happen instead of trying to clean up after the fact. I just think keeping mindful of that is so important. Kevin.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, reducing demand on those resources is the thing that we can all do. And for example, you'll be hearing more about King County, unincorporated King County, including Vashon, some updated building codes, which, for example, will require any builder who puts piping in for natural gas, right, another fossil fuel, to require them to also put an electric outlet nearby for, say, if you want to decide to change from a gas dryer, clothes dryer, to an electric clothes dryer. You'll have the outlet right there. You don't have to rip the walls out of your house to retrofit. So, and people will be able to comment on that, particularly people from Vashon. So just there's a number of good things happening in the reduce the amount of fossil fuels, reduce the pressure on extraction, and electrify everything. You know, next time you have an opportunity to choose between a fossil fuel versus a gas or electric appliance, go electric.
And that's one of those, you know, so important, Kevin. Thank you for sharing that, because besides reducing greenhouse gases by going to renewable sources, you know, we are also protecting the environment in other ways, pollutants in particular, such as that. Lynn, you've got
something there. I just want to give a shout out to all the people. We even have them here, scientists who are doing a lot of work on water quality and on cleaning the oceans now, you know, various ways to do that, because I think the days are long gone when we can be out of sight, out of mind, and just throw things in the ocean like it's some bottomless pit. We see that it's an ecology and that we all depend on each other. So
I think the days are, I couldn't agree more, Lynn, and the days are gone both for our treatment of the ocean that way as well as the sky.
Yes.
You know, not seeing it, that it is something we need to protect. I would like to end today, we're just in our last couple minutes here, with something I came across in the New York Times by Trish Harris and Warren, and it's called Why Poetry is So Critical Right Now. So I'm going to read this little bit from her and then a final single stanza from our Vashon poet laureate, Sandra Noel, one of her poems. And first of all, this is why poetry is so critical right now. I clumsily try to explain my longing for verse. I hunger for a transcendent reality, the good, the true, the beautiful. Those things which somehow lie beyond mere argument. Yet often as a writer and simply a person online, I find that my life is dominated by debate, controversy, and near strangers in shouting matches about politics or church doctrine. This past year in particular was marked by vitriol and divisiveness, and I'm exhausted by the rancor. In this weary and vulnerable place, poetry whispers of truth that cannot be confined to mere rationality or experience. And with that introduction, I picked up this book called Love Island by our Vashon poet laureate, Sandra Noel, and actually found it at Thriftway, which I shout out to Thriftway for carrying poetry books. This is the final stanza of her poem that I would like to end with today. It's called, and this is the poem that shares the title of the book, Love Island. Come, walk in my forest. I will embrace you with branches of sweet-scented cedar and offerings of salmon berries in the spring. And so thank you to her and all of you. Happy birthday, Kevin, and